Tentor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dark Justice, Hunt, by Jenna Ryan. Narrated by Tanya Eby. Prologue.
I have to meet McCabe.
Taking his wife by the arms, Johnny Hunt lowered his head and set his mouth on hers. As always, Malia Rose immediately lost her train of thought. When Johnny kissed her, her brain tended to melt. Nothing connected except wave after wave of pure sensation. He nuzzled her lower lip, opened his eyes a little, and looked into hers.
I love you, Mel. I really, really love you.
Offering him a seductive smile, she wrapped her arms around his neck and pressed her body against him.
Love you back, Johnny.
Here's an idea. Why don't you forget about McCabe, and I'll skip my night in the casino? We can drink wine, order room service, and make love until the sun comes up, or goes down again, if you've got the stamina.
Can't.
He nibbled her earlobe and ran his thumbs over her nipples.
We'll have to settle for anticipation. Go to the casino and play a few games of blackjack. You've earned a break from the workshops and seminars.
She kissed his cheeks, then nipped at his mouth. If we're lucky, McCabe won't have much to say. It's possible. She laughed at the dark look he sent her. Okay, not going to happen. One last kiss and then she stepped away. No more teasing. We can pick this up later, after McCabe pisses you off with a new assignment and I lose some ridiculous dollar amount at the blackjack table. He tugged a strand of her long red-brown hair.
Look on the bright side. You might win big.
If I win, the hospital gets it. We need a new CT scanner. He pulled her forward for a fast, hungry kiss.
Get lots of blackjacks.
Smiling, she turned and headed for the bedroom. The door barely clicked as he left the suite. She wore red, glittery, and a little daring. Two of her colleagues met her in the lobby, and together they strolled into the gaming room. Atlantic City might not have been as awe-inspiring as Las Vegas, but Malia liked the East Coast vibe generated by the boardwalk bars and casinos. The three of them split up almost immediately. One wanted to play roulette, the other had a thing for slots, and Malia was determined to spend at least 20 minutes at a blackjack table. After she chose one, a man in a casual suit, wearing a white shirt open at the collar, came to sit beside her.
Hello there, gorgeous. Please tell me you're here alone.
Grinning, she showed him her finger. Sorry, no. You'll want to concentrate on the cards. He's a federal marshal. When a server strolled past with a tray of red wine, the man plucked two glasses from the edge and handed her one.
For luck. And I mean at cards.
Malia sipped the Merlot. It was fairly decent for house wine. Not as good as the French Cabernet she and Johnny had been drinking upstairs, but all in all, the effect would probably be similar. She'd have to be careful not to drink too much more.
Charm's not a problem, just as long as we're clear. I'm not interested in knowing you better.
He raised a hand in surrender.
Message received and processed. I'll stay on 16.
You? The wine had a silky texture that went down easily. She played three hands and busted every time. A sigh escaped. Oh well, this was a bonus anyway. The convention's the prize.
The man grinned. Since you've helped me win twice, I'd say introductions are in order. I'm Matthew.
Malia,
she returned.
Were the lights going down, she wondered. The room seemed darker all of a sudden, and oddly claustrophobic.
I think we should toast to our one and only meeting in this life.
When he smiled, his canines looked sharp. Malia shook off the illusion and raised her glass.
Second? Third? She couldn't remember.
The air felt warm and sticky, so much so, in fact, that tendrils of heat seemed to rise from the carpet. The tables and machines glowed. She wasn't sure, but she thought her fingers might be going numb. Okay, that had to be an illusion.
Are you all right? Matthew took her arm. Oops, little stumble there. Maybe. Do you want to go upstairs?
Malia realized she must have answered because he nodded and increased the pressure on her arm.
This way. Main door's right, and the elevators are across the lobby. Do you have your key?
Johnny won't be long. I'll wait for him.
Waiting in your room would be better than down here, I think.
Matthew steered her gently toward the elevator. The motion of the car rising made her feel as if she was ascending to heaven. Maybe she was. She swore she saw Johnny waiting at the gate. Scruffy angel, she murmured, but he merely smiled and held out his hand to her. We are who we are and what we are, Mel. I'm no angel. He'd said something to that effect at their wedding, in the vows he'd written for her. Hers had been more poetic, even if she couldn't bring them to mind right then. The gate before her opened, and she floated through. She was drifting on a cloud. Images formed in her mind, a bit like a dream, but not quite. Matthew danced through her head, but she had no idea why. Even fluffier clouds beckoned. When she touched them, they were soft and inviting. She sank down and let them billow around her. There were wine glasses and a magnificent view of Atlantic City at night. Sighing in her sleep, she rolled over. The cloud was more solid than before. Darkness slowly gave way to shimmering dawn. Reaching out, she stroked the skin of Johnny's back and smiled. Count on her husband to find her cloud and join her on it. A feeling of peacefulness lingered as she stretched. She was going to take the cloud home with her, or at least the duvet, because part of her hazy mind understood that it was really a bed, and clouds had nothing to do with it. The shimmer of light intensified. The door closed. Cool air fluttered across her cheeks.
What the hell is this?
Her eyes snapped open. The heavenly cocoon surrounding her dissolved. Something shattered against the wall. What? She sat up with a start, shook the fog from her mind. Johnny, what are you doing?
What am I doing?
He loomed over her, more dangerous than she'd ever seen him. Although fury radiated, his voice dropped several notches.
Turn your head, Malia.
Malia? He never called her that. Never. Dazed and confused, she did as he instructed and saw... Jesus. Shoving herself a full foot sideways, she stared at the man lying on his stomach next to her. Her gaze shot to Johnny. Who the hell's he? I mean... She kicked the man's leg under the covers. Who is he? While Johnny continued to glare, the man rolled over. Matthew's lopsided smile greeted her.
Hey, doll, that was some fantastic night, wasn't it?
Chapter 1 Istanbul sweltered in the late afternoon sun. The mingled scents of tobacco, spice, sweat, and seawater permeated the air, while, down below, the pier facing the Bosporus bustled with people. Seated on rows of chairs and benches, a group of elderly men puffed on hookah pipes. Several of them smiled haplessly at passers-by. Or maybe it's some private joke. Johnny Hunt knew they came to that same place every day. But even after spending 6 months in the crowded Turkish city, he still didn't fully understand what the local rituals entailed. As he stood under a rippling canopy, hoping to escape the sun that seemed to burn down to the bone, a youngish man, with only a few more teeth than his senior counterparts, offered him a half-smoked joint and a look of full-blown hope. Johnny scotched the look by indicating his own hand-rolled cigarette. He chuckled when the man slumped, then straightened and zeroed in on a more promising target.
Hope springs eternal, old friend.
The voice behind him was both American and familiar, and it made his jaw clench to hear it. Not that he hadn't been expecting the contact. It was more that McCabe's being here could only mean one thing. Trouble. Glancing sideways through the shield of his sunglasses, Johnny brought his longtime friend and occasional nemesis into focus. McCabe never changed. He was always a little unshaven, a whole lot cool, and secretive as hell. Enigmatic was how Malia had described him, and why the hell had he gone there? In response to McCabe's remark, he took a drag on his cigarette and gazed placidly over the busy dock.
I was working on it until I got your weird text. Assholes got noses on the ground and in the air. What the hell does that mean? I'm 95% sure I don't want to know. It means Satyr's got sniffer dogs circling Malia, giving her a wide berth at this point, but in the vicinity and watching. Shit.
Johnny's gaze scanned the fishing boats that jockeyed for position, even as they hauled their nets onto waterlogged decks.
Why? No idea. Bull,
Johnny said mildly.
If Ben Satyr has people watching Malia, then he's figured out I still care, or he strongly suspects it. Our plan sealed the deal on Malia's end. She couldn't have done anything to arouse his suspicions. Ergo, one of us screwed up.
McCabe tugged his ball cap lower to block the relentless sun.
Something screwed up, he agreed. Tell me again about that break-in 2 weeks ago. My room was tossed. Whoever did it took the money I leave for thieves and ran. All they took was money? You're sure about that?
Johnny slanted him a wry look.
I'm sure. I've gotten good at this game of who the hell cares over the past 3 years. Rooms get tossed in Istanbul on a regular basis. And yet, 2 weeks after the fact, my people have ID'd Sater's people inching too close to your ex-wife for my liking.
A headache loomed, but Johnny ignored it. He'd gone to extremely painful lengths to ensure Malia's safety. No way would he let a bastard drug lord like Sater threaten her on any level.
It was a sound plan, he maintained.
And it had been. They'd set her up. Remembering how they'd done it still made him feel sick. Jesus, they'd tricked her into thinking she'd slept with another man.
He'd been forced to walk in and listen to someone else's false account of what had happened. Angry and upset, he'd thrown a lamp against the wall and left the room. She'd tried to explain, but of course that hadn't been possible. The images that had been planted in her mind had her believing she'd slept with someone else. He'd told her he couldn't deal with it and taken a job overseas. Once he'd believed she was safe, he'd started the divorce proceedings. The whole fucking thing had hurt her like hell, and it damn near killed him. He'd done it to keep Sater from taking out his insane need for revenge on her. And the plan had worked. So why the interest now? Why all of a sudden, after 3 years of nothing?
You didn't risk contacting her?
McCabe asked. Johnny pushed back the pain and guilt.
No. Contacting someone she knows? Friends? Family? Colleagues? No. What about social media? For Christ's sake.
Irritation brought the guilt, always present inside him, rushing back.
I said no. Sater's threats were real. He was going to kill Malia to make me suffer, and you know he meant it. There was no choice involved here. Keeping Malia safe is all I care about, all I think about, all I want. It's my first, last, and only goal in life.
McCabe nodded.
Unfortunately, I believe you. And in the end, the hows don't matter. Sater's people are there, so's one of mine. But shit happens, Johnny. Could be mockeries playing into this unexpected interest. Maybe.
Because Ben Sater's boss, James Mockery, was as insane and sadistic as Sater himself. Except that Sater had personal reasons for wanting to destroy Johnny's life. Those reasons went back to the time they'd spent together in an Iraqi prison. An Iraqi hellhole, in point of fact. The nightmare had started long before that, but Iraq had been the culmination. Long before Sater had gone to work for Mockery, they'd known each other. If Sater had wanted something, Mockery would probably have been more than happy to help him. Mockery was sly, and he had contacts in high places. It was possible he'd been the one to figure out McCabe's 3-year-old plan. Johnny's temples began to throb. He crushed the mostly smoked cigarette under the heel of his boot.
Where's she living? Deception Cove. It's in the Florida Everglades. She's been there for 14 months. She tried Concord, New Hampshire, and a town called Bastion's Landing in South Carolina. Spent a year in each place. Was responsible for the relocations. She came to me in both cases.
Johnny noted that McCabe's gaze slid to a drug deal going down on one of the smaller boats.
My guess, she's having trouble settling. Face it, the way we handled it, she believes she cheated on you. That has to cut pretty deep.
Johnny didn't want to go there.
Better cut than dead. We both know Sater would have killed her in a minute to get back at me for what he thinks I did to him in Iraq. And before. Sater or Mockery?
McCabe fashioned a set of scales with his hands.
Which way are you leaning? Sater,
Johnny said without hesitation.
Mockery might be willing to help, partly out of friendship and partly because he's a perverted prick who gets his rocks off torturing and tormenting people. But at the heart of it, Sater's a more spiteful bastard. So,
McCabe motioned upward to where the bars and drug dens waited in the afternoon rush.
Let's say we have a drink and figure out how we can screw the bastard back. Might as well toast the positive side of this.
Johnny tugged his own cap down over hair that hadn't seen a pair of scissors for more than 6 months.
Enlighten me, McCabe. What's positive here? We know that, of the two, Sater is the bigger asshole. But at least he'll kill her outright. Mockery will torture her. The bastard has an evil soul. He hides it when he wants to. If Sator wants Malia dead, I'll guarantee Mockery will find a way to be involved in the manner of her death. Wait a minute. Maybe I should rethink that positive aspect.
Johnny regarded him shrewdly.
Damn right you should. If you think Mockery's evil, spend some time with his mini-me. Sator's catching up to his boss at warp speed. All I care about is making sure neither of them touches Malia.
Chapter 2 Deception Cove. The name sounded vaguely mysterious. It was the kind of place where people with secrets might live. Malia had a secret, a dark truth she refused to acknowledge most days. It haunted her at night, and had for the past 3 years, but during the day, she could sometimes forget it existed. Unfortunately, it did exist, and the guilt that came with it would be with her forever. It wouldn't matter how far she ran or how many places she tried to hide. There was no escaping the ugly fact that she'd cheated on her husband. Whether she wanted to believe it or not, the images were in her head. The view of Atlantic City, Matthew in her room holding a wine glass, smiling down at her as she sank onto the cloud of her bed. She shuddered whenever she thought about it. The air smelled ever so slightly of the swamp as she examined her final patient of the day. The man, a local mechanic, held up a blackened hand.
"Damn rat bit me," he declared. "Biggest sucker you ever saw, Doc. Fat as a raccoon, and then some."
Hiding a smile, Malia washed both the cut and his dirty hand. "Must have been a really old rat, Percy. Its teeth were large and blunt."
"Yeah, well, rats get old too, right?"
He squirmed in his seat.
"Just make the pain go away and patch me up so I can get back to work on Sheriff Travers's truck."
The smile broke through. "Oh, I can't let you go back to work. Not just like that. You'll need a series of shots first. For rabies."
"What?"
Percy snatched his wounded hand away, cradling it against his chest.
"You gone batty or something. I don't want no needles."
Malia drew his arm back toward her. "Rats can carry a number of diseases. Rabies is one of them. Unless you killed it and can show me the corpse, I have to assume rabies and give you the proper treatment. Otherwise, you run the risk of developing hydrophobia." His eyes narrowed in mistrust.
"What'd happen if I did develop it?"
"You'd die."
"From a little bite."
"Big bite," Malia countered. She probably shouldn't have done it, but she couldn't resist teasing him. That wasn't the first time he'd had teeth marks on some part of his arm. "Yours seemed to have been inflicted by an old rat with a powerful jaw and blunt teeth." Percy lowered his gaze to his lap.
"Maybe it weren't a rat at that. Maybe it was old Butch, my dog. He doesn't have rabies."
"He might if he was bitten by a rat. Anyway, Butch doesn't have enough teeth left to bite anyone, even if he could rouse himself long enough to do it. You need shots, Percy." Malia raised her brows and continued the teasing tone. "Unless you'd like to change your story." A red stain crept up his stubbly neck.
"Why would I do that?"
"I don't know. Maybe because you don't want me to think you weren't quick enough to avoid your wife's teeth. Rumor has it this has happened before. Did you bite her first?" Percy's head snapped up.
"No. She bit me because I wouldn't give her no good brother a job."
"I thought you gave him a job 4 months ago."
"I did. I've hired and fired him 3 times. Dumbass blew up an engine last week. Hell, Doc, all I asked him to do was change the friggin' oil. He tried to tell me the engine blew itself up, but that's a load of bull, and I knew it. And he knew I knew it. Only one who didn't know it was my wife, and he went bellyaching straight to her with his load of crap. Does that seem right to you? Her taking his side and not mine?"
Malia sighed. "Don't ask me, Percy. I'm no expert on marriage. I'll assume Angie doesn't have rabies."
"She's got venom, and plenty of it."
He jerked a shoulder.
"But no rabies."
He stabbed the index finger of his injured hand at her.
"This stays between you and me, right? Sheriff Travers is Angie's cousin. He gives me enough grief as it is."
"He gives you grief, you fix his truck." Malia finished cleaning the wound. "Sounds like a workable trade-off to me. But no, I won't say anything. Doctor-patient privilege. What happens in this office stays in this office. At least it does for me.
I hope you mean that.
Malia felt Percy's stare grow speculative as she worked. At length, he cleared his throat.
So, you, got a thing going with the sheriff?
What? No, I mean, we've gone out a few times. I like him. He's definitely a better cook than I am. Why do you ask?
Just wondering. You know folks like to talk. How's about that developer guy from Jacksonville?
Nope.
The farmer who used to be a fireman down Miami way? He did a calendar. Angie says he's hot as sizzling spit. Of course, Angie also thinks her dumbass brother looks just like Matt Damon. He likes you, by the way.
Who, Matt Damon?
No, Angie's dumbass brother. Keep up, Doc. You about done patching me up?
Getting close. Bite's not as deep as you probably think. Use a glove while you're doing stuff for the next week or so to keep the bandage clean. She knew he wouldn't, but she had to make the suggestion.
You ever been married?
Percy asked out of the blue. Then he jerked back.
Ow!
Sorry. She breathed through a rush of guilt and pain. I was married once, she said. It didn't last.
What happened?
When cornered, lie. She smiled. Nothing earth-shattering. We had very different careers. Things got in the way of our long-term happiness.
Sounds like big city bullshit to me.
We lived in L.A.
Figures.
He considered for a moment.
Hollywood's in L.A. Did you ever meet Matt Damon?
She grinned. Saw him. Twice. Your brother-in-law doesn't look a thing like him. Pushing away, she rummaged in a drawer. Here's a glove you can use when you're not working. It's washable. Come back in 2 days and I'll change the dressing. Don't get your hand wet and don't pull any wrenches for at least that long. We'll see what's what after that. She poked his arm before he could argue. Sheriff Travers has more than one vehicle. He can make do. I'll give you something for the pain and something else to stop any infection. He stood.
Pills? Or those things you shove up your butt?
After writing out the prescriptions and handing them to him, she opened the door to the examining room. Live dangerously, Percy. Find out when you get these filled. And keep a positive thought. Maybe some of the construction workers rolling into town will need work done on their vehicles.
Maybe.
Percy let his gaze slide to the far side of the waiting room. Malia followed it and spotted a man in the corner. He had his back to her, but she knew him well enough that her stomach muscles immediately knotted. Johnny, was her first thought, followed by a vision of blood and, God help her, possibly worse. What's wrong? She asked. Turning, the man offered her a slow smile.
Hey there, Dr. Rose. Not what you're probably thinking, so you can relax. What's it been? 14, 15 months?
Not what she was probably thinking. Well, of all people, McCabe would know. But whatever his reason for being there, he was a wrinkle she really didn't need in her already twisted life. Like a dog with a bone, Percy nudged her arm.
You two related?
Not really, she replied. Tony here is my cousin's ex-husband's former brother-in-law.
Huh?
He's a survivalist from Colorado. Go to the drugstore, Percy, pick up your painkillers, and apologize to Angie. Watch a movie together tonight. Matt Damon, if you can find one you agree on. Neither she nor McCabe said anything until the door closed behind her curious patient. McCabe was a smart man, not to mention a handsome one. He had enough of a beard to disguise his face, and what the beard didn't cover, the brim of his black hat did. He also wore a faded plaid shirt over denim and work boots covered with at least 10 layers of mud. Looking good, McCabe. She locked the street door and turned the sign. What brings you here? I'm not planning to relocate.
I'm not planning to relocate you.
He started toward her.
You're looking good too, Mel. Better than the last time we met.
She stared him down. What do you want?
To talk.
He held up his hands.
Only that. You came to me after Atlantic City when you found you couldn't settle, and I helped you carve out a new life. Connections.
He grinned.
They come in handy.
They do, she agreed. And I appreciate you pulling strings so I could try different places, searching for the right fit.
Is this it?
He asked. Possibly, inasmuch as anywhere ever will be. She wouldn't ask, she promised herself. McCabe might be Johnny's boss, but they were also friends and had been for several years. McCabe would have information, but no, better to stay on neutral ground. I've been seeing a man, sort of. I have a house and a housekeeper. Her name's Gertrude. She swears she's possessed by the spirit of Betty Davis.
Betty Davis wanted to come back over and clean houses for a living?
McCabe grinned.
You sure you don't want to relocate? There are some great small towns in Kentucky.
I like the Everglades. The life cycles are fascinating.
And it doesn't hurt that you were born in the area. You have a cousin here, don't you?
Nearby. Joseph's an illustrator. An artist, really. But bills have to be paid.
Sociable?
Not especially. Why are you here, McCabe?
Do you want the sugar-coated version, or right in your face?
Her heart stuttered. Has something happened to Johnny? He shook his head.
No.
Nodding at the partly shaded window, he asked,
Is there some place we can talk?
What's wrong with my office?
No offense, Malia. I don't like doctor's offices. A drink would be good in any case.
Malia told herself to be patient as she removed her lab coat and pulled the clip holding her hair free. You're such a pain, she said. We can go to Carmen's. She serves Night Glow bourbon.
What the hell's that?
No idea. The only time Joseph tried it, he claimed he lost 8 hours of his life. Steadying herself, she faced him. Does your being here involve Johnny in any way? He gave a slight nod.
Yeah.
So he's not hurt, but he's the reason you're in Deception Cove. Her smile came and went in a flash. Maybe I'll try some of Carmen's Night Glow bourbon. What's the worst that can happen, considering what went down in Atlantic City?
McCabe took her arm. We'll stick to something safer. And I want your word you won't throw it in my face when I tell you what I have to tell you.
She narrowed her eyes at him. I know Johnny's pissed off at me, but he isn't a coward. Why doesn't he tell me himself?
Because he's more emotionally invested than I am.
And? She sensed more. McCabe opened the door and looked down at her.
We flipped a coin.
He moved a shoulder.
I lost. It should have been me,
Johnny thought. He should have been with Malia at that moment, probably getting a drink thrown in his face. Or hell, maybe she'd throw the whole bottle. Whatever the case, McCabe had no business dealing with it. Telling her how it had really been and why. Explaining that they'd set her up, made her believe she'd slept with another man when, in fact, he'd been a government agent with laudable acting skills and a whole lot of bonus cash in his pocket. Johnny's own acting job had been infinitely better. But what choice had he had? Sader had wanted him to experience prolonged suffering. He'd wanted Johnny's life ruined, not ended. And Malia had been his weapon of choice. He'd have killed her in a heartbeat rather than do anything to Johnny himself. And all because he blamed Johnny for the death of someone he'd loved, someone who unfortunately hadn't loved him. A dead man felt nothing, showed nothing, and these days, Sader lived to revel.
Fuck.
Tipping back a beer that had long since gone warm, Johnny rubbed a tired eye and surveyed the town of Deception Cove from a distance. Swamps all around meant bugs swarmed by the millions. The air pulsed with them. Birds chattered and sang. On a slightly more disturbing note, he had a feeling the clicking sounds he heard didn't come from grasshoppers. Alligators lived there, and they didn't always confine themselves to the water. Keeping the windows of his truck rolled down, he listened to Garth and Reba and Kenny, and pictured Malia's reaction to the news. To the truth. Would she understand and accept? Not a chance. Not right away, at any rate. Would she shoot the messenger, or tell him to go to hell and stay there? He could see her doing the last thing. She had a temper. Well controlled, but present when the situation warranted. And he couldn't deny she'd be justified, except that in this case, McCabe didn't deserve her wrath. Johnny did. Start to finish, he was the one who'd hurt her. He shooed away a fly the size of a hummingbird, never taking his eyes off the town. It could have come straight out of a 1950s movie set, where alien creatures roamed or giant tarantulas threatened to tear up the square. McCabe's report had stated that there was a single mechanic in residence, A mayor who drank and supported two mistresses, a diner, a hotel with a restaurant, a cafe, a pizza joint, and three establishments where the residents could drink, play.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?